Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody, to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you back here this week. We had Jane Silk on last week, and now it's back to me again. So, thank you for listening in, but if you are just now hearing this show, perhaps on one of the affiliates out there, and you want to know where to find out more about it, you can go to MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. We do want to heap a lot of praise on the Main Street Radio Network because, despite some of their sponsors, obviously if you listen to some of the ads this week, disagreeing with the content on this show, the Main Street Radio Network has always valued our First Amendment rights, and they support our program nonetheless, so we appreciate that. We also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show. The Main Street Radio Network is at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. You can find out about this show, The Alan Nathan Show, up there as well. You can also find us on social media. Of course, Main Street Radio Network, you'll see Jane, if you liked her, hearing her last week, you'll find many of her posts on Facebook under the Main Street Radio Network page, as well as you'll find some of their information on Twitter at Main Street Radio. Mostly that's just relegated to topics for the Alan Nathan Show, though, which can be found at alannathan.com, on Twitter at Alan Nathan, and he also posts on the Facebook page. And if you are really interested in when I host, whether it's this show or the Alan Nathan Show, go to Getter, GETTR.com at Silk or Joe Show. And that's when I advertise whenever I guest host for Alan or what's coming up for this show, or on the rare occasion where Jane Silk guest host for Alan Nathan as well. All right, all that out of the way. Before I get to this current guest, though, who's waiting, I do want to say a little behind-the-scenes information here. I'm the guy who gets the guests for this show and the Alan Nathan Show. And usually once a week you can count on me to screw up. Well, unfortunately, our current guest, twice, 2 weeks in a row, he was the guy I screwed up with. No one else but him, and nothing personal, sir, but it's just, I don't know, somehow something always slips past me each week. But we are joined now by Richard Lyons, third-generation printer and author of The DNA of Democracy and Shadows of the Acropolis. Thank you for joining us today. How are you, Mr. Lyons?
Well, third time's a charm, Joe. I'm very happy to be on.
All right. Well, happy to have you on. And again, I apologize for all that. Like,
oh,
I
it's
said,
fine.
It's going. All right. So you have a new book out, DNA of Democracy. Now,
yeah.
You have that as a volume one, I see. And I guess that's because of Shadows of the Acropolis being in volume two. So tell us a little bit about DNA of Democracy.
Yeah, well, there are two volumes because they're sequential. And the DNA of Democracy, volume one, is all about the how and why America was created the way she was created constitutionally, why it is unique, and the great efflorescence of our constitutional republic up to 1910. So it covers a good deal of ground, but it's all in narrative story form and very relatable. So it's all about the importance of the Constitution, the importance of our being a Republican federal system, and that forms the basis for Volume 2, which is called Shadows of the Acropolis, which carries on from 1910 or so, and it carries on with the birth and growth of the administrative state. A lot of people don't know about the administrative state, how it was born and how it grew, and it is antithetical to our mode of representative government, so that if you work in the administrative state, you are a person of life tenure who is answerable literally to no one. So it's all about how the first volume is all about how we formed our democracy, our republic, and the second volume is all about how we've moved away from that virtuous foundation.
And it's a not very slow process either for moving away. In fact, we moved away much faster than we formed the system.
Yes, that's true. It's been 100 years since Woodrow Wilson gave birth to this thing based on ideal German state theory. Our constitutional republic was based on the philosophy of John Locke. The ideal German state theory is based on the philosophy of Frederick Hegel and Karl Marx as his devotee. So we really have now today, I think it's what everybody needs to understand and why our country seems in such a mess. We actually have two governments occupying the same space. You have one that is representative and democratic and federal, and you have another that is concentrated in wealth and power and in one city of America. And so this is, my works detail why this is a massive problem and why we are now at a Y in the road between one kind of government and the other. They can't coexist anymore.
No, and we're seeing the cracks in the dam forming between where we're eventually going to be pushed into one form of government or another, probably the Germanic theory, just because the government's going to say, hey, we need all these controls in order to handle it. And the population has been sold on a lie that their liberties and all of that, the first form of government, are the problem, when really for the last 100 years it's been the second form.
Yes, that's exactly right, Joe. And this is what my works explain, and which so few people understand. But once you see everything going on these days, from a wide open southern border to sanctuary cities to riots and looting to DAs not enforcing law but allowing lawbreakers whatever freedom they want, these are all symptoms of the same disease, and it is a disease of our representatives not listening to us and the administrative state becoming more and more socialist in its nature. I mean, it was born as a socialist organ, and it continues to be so, but with more concentrated power, with more aggression. We're coming to a Y in the road.
Yeah, well, we saw actually the beginnings of that abuse of power under the – well, not the beginnings. We saw a manifestation of it under the Trump administration, where he had the hashtag resistance, the group of unelected bureaucrats who said, well, you know what?
Oh.
We think this president is illegitimate, so we're going to do what we want. That was unthinkable when this country was founded.
It was unthinkable 50 years ago, Joe, because everybody still believed in the same commonwealth, the same common things like rule of law, like elections. You allow elections to happen, and you live with the election. Nowadays, in the last two elections, very good you brought that up. In Trump's first election, he was elected illegitimately, but from the moment he was elected, he was attacked and persecuted throughout his entire presidency. And in the next elections, in six toss-up states, matters were changed so that not the legislature, but the attorneys and the AGs changed the fundamental voting laws to allow mail-in voting so that corruption could be successful. It's unprecedented, and it is symptomatic of where we are today. They do not want anyone they do not approve in that office, because that office has become so powerful.
And it never used to be that powerful. I mean, I remember reading, what was it, Mark Twain's The Gilded Age, where he's talking about how senators seem to have more power than the president. Everyone knows their senator, but hardly anyone knew the president.
But that was by design, Joe, because those were the representatives of their states. And that changed with Woodrow Wilson, when senators started to be elected not by their legislatures, whereby they would defend their states, but by the whole population. And secondly, by the income tax, which raked all the wealth of the country into one city and then gave that wealth back based on how well you followed the rules of the administrative state. And that's still functioning today. So that senators 100 years ago were the power because they represented their states. Now, so much power has been put into the federal government, but therein into the executive branch, that presidents rule in a rather like emperors nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's certainly contrary to what the founders wanted, because they were trying to get themselves away from single tyrants, monarchs ruling over the country.
It is. It's exactly what the founders feared is what we have today.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reflection of what the British were trying to do before the Revolutionary War, and it's why the Revolutionary War was fought. Exactly why. And again, I detail it in the books. If you want to know how and why America was created and why it's so special, that's the DNA of democracy. If you want to know why it seems so screwed up today, that's the shadows of the Acropolis. And I think I've explained it well enough for anybody to understand.
Mm-hmm. And we've got a minute left here. What motivated you into writing these books?
Well, just like you, Joe, and just like probably all of your listeners, eight or six years ago, I was wondering what was going on in my country and why it had changed so profoundly with the Obama administration. And I lived through the Clintons and all that, and all their rapacious sort of influence peddling. And I was wondering what was wrong. So I had to go back to learn what was right and then to catalog or chronicle what has gone wrong. So those are the two books.
Where can we get a copy of them?
Yeah. Oh, at Amazon.com, of course. Any retail store that you ask for, the book, a library by request, or at RichardCLyons.com.
All right. Richard Lyons, appreciate you being on the Silk or Joe Show today. Again, listeners, his books are titled The DNA of Democracy and Shadows of the Acropolis. That is volumes 1 and 2 of a set. You can find them, like he said, Amazon. Go look it up. It's very important information for you to know. It's a great civic lesson for the kids as well. And we do have more Silk or Joe Show coming up after this break.
This report is sponsored by Office Depot. At Office Depot, teachers mean the world to us. For all of their support, guidance, smiles, and tears. For the early morning extra help sessions, late night paper grading, and everything in between, their desire to create brighter futures and make the world a better place is inspiring. To thank teachers this Teacher Appreciation Week and beyond, teachers with a free Office Depot Office Max Rewards membership can get a special coupon for 30% back in bonus rewards on qualifying in-store purchases, including classroom supplies, arts and crafts, cleaning supplies, and more. Now through July 1st, visit officedepot.com/education to learn more. And thanks to the generosity of Office Depot and Office Max customers, the company raised over $2.1 million to support teachers, students, and Title I schools last year. The in-store school supply drive was recently enhanced, and this year will help hundreds of additional Title I schools nationwide. Visit officedepot.com or a local Office Depot or Office Max store to learn more.
Spring is here. Time to get out of the gym and take your workout outdoors. Whether you're walking, running, swimming, or biking, it's important to have a proper warm-up routine to prevent injuries. Five-time Ironman triathlon world champion Craig Crowe-Alexander has some advice.
Sprains, strains, and injuries can happen to any athlete. Even a minor injury can affect your performance and derail your fitness routine. One of the best ways to try and prevent injuries is to make sure you prepare properly.
Alexander recommends always starting with a 10 to 15 minute dynamic warm-up.
Activation exercises combined with some dynamic movements like lunges are great for warming up. Focus on one specific movement at a time until you feel ready to go. Be sure to listen to your body and use proper support gear when needed to protect yourself and prevent injury.
The Curad Performance Series Ironman lineup includes rugged supports, wraps, kinesiology tape, bandages, and analgesics to support you on your fitness journey. For more, go to Curad.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Adopt US Kids for multiple choice parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve, it's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. So, dovetailing with the previous segment and the abuse of power by the government and how we've totally radically changed from what this country started out as to what it is now, with unelected bureaucrats being the enforcement arm, nothing you can do about them, certainly nothing Congress or the president are willing to do anything about, no matter who's in office, apparently. It came out recently that the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency has decided that the government owns your thoughts. Yeah, thought I'd give you a half second of emptiness and silence to let that sink in as you think the thoughts that the government says that they actually own. They call it cognitive infrastructure. And again, this is coming from the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, a subsection of the Department of Homeland Security. So according to Homeland Security, your thoughts are the government's cognitive infrastructure. And they argue that they can regulate what you think. They consider it under their rule, under their area of control. The thoughts in your head are actually belonging to the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, part of the Department of Homeland Security. It's an interesting leak that was. This information was revealed as part of an overall investigation, the criminal case, Missouri versus Biden, which was filed last year. It was May 5th last year, so I can't say exactly a year ago. And during the discovery process, information like this has come out about what the government thinks about what you think. They think they own what you think. And this is alarming in several ways. Of course, First Amendment rules, that just got destroyed right there. The First Amendment certainly indicates that the government has no right to control what you think. And actually, such things were far beyond even the imaginations of the Founding Fathers at that time. They probably never even thought that the King of England would go that far. But nope, we are ran right now. The United States seems to be ran by tyrants much more powerful and ambitious than the tyrants that this country was founded to avoid. This country was not founded to just become a worse tyranny than that which it left, but that is what the government is doing right now. And it's not entirely the Biden administration's fault. Unfortunately, the CISA, the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, that was established under President Trump, but being ran by DC bureaucrats who think they know better than you about everything and think they should control your thoughts. In fact, they think they are entitled to it. They think they have a right to control what goes on in your head. Well, inevitably, no matter what the good reasons that the CISA was founded for, it would turn out like this because, again, elitist bureaucrats who are running the show think they know better than you about your life. And that's actually pretty much the Democrat Party platform. Turn yourself over to their experts. They're experts who never left a college campus or never left D.C. They don't know what the country is. Heck, some of them probably only saw farmland in pictures and never actually, or maybe out the window of a plane, never actually drove through or stopped at a farm or anything like that. But that's the situation we are in. These people managed over the decades to secure this kind of power for themselves. There wasn't like one generation, you know, decided, hey, we're going to do all this for ourselves. It's been a buildup over the years, as we were discussing in the last segment. This is like plaque in the arteries. It just builds up and builds up. It's no one decision that causes all that plaque to form in your artery. It's a series of poor choices over the years, and that's what we're seeing with the government. This plaque that's building up in the arteries of democracy that's just been building up over the years after one poor choice after another. Some we think were healthy. You know, like again, going to the plaque analogy, margarine. We were told that was healthy, and instead it turns out that actually makes things worse in your arteries. Well, I guess the CISA, President Trump thought was a good idea, but that was just the margarine that added more plaque to the arteries of the government. And it's very disturbing how far they think they are entitled to go. They're saying your thoughts belong to them. Well, where does that lead? More practically, whether or not you care about if the government controls what you think. Some Democrats don't. In fact, they think it's a good thing if the government controls what you think. They don't think that you should be allowed to have any thoughts that they disagree with. That's actually typical of the Democratic Party platform these days, and gee whiz, if you listen to any of their activists or any of their media personalities, there absolutely should not be any thoughts that they disagree with. They are in love with this kind of power. because, well, they don't think that they'll be subject to it. Of course, not the elites, not the activists, none of them. They think it's just going to be directed at their political enemies. Well, they are not students of history on that note. The moment they become rabble-rousers or try to go outside their lane in their new paradise, they're going to find out what kind of hell it really is. However, again, more practically, this does have striking issues when it comes to copyright laws. For example, if every thought that comes in your head is not yours, but it is property of the government, then does that mean that if you produce a product, the government is entitled to all the money from it? Because after all, it's not you. You're just part of the cognitive infrastructure, as they put it. Everything you do is the government's property. So there goes the idea of capitalism. This is actually a very socialist, communist, Marxist idea. I'm just lumping them all together because really no one uses them as they're supposed to be used anymore anyway. I'm pretty sure a true socialist would be kind of horrified by this as well. However, actually even some of the Marxists, well, Stalinists, the Stalinists would be fine with this. And that is actually kind of who's running the country right now. True Marxists, true socialists, they actually might be opposed to this as well. Because, you know, some of them actually do believe government should be held accountable for its actions. However, overall, what we have running this are not Marxists, socialists, or communists, but Stalinists. And that is a very big difference between those two. The Stalinists are the power-mad psychopaths who just absolutely do not care about you as a person, your individual liberties. No, they do it in power for the sake of power. They want to be, they just love controlling people. And now we have the government, allegedly we have constitutional protections from this, yet the government that enforces those constitutional protections says that your thoughts are part of its cognitive infrastructure. Homeland Security thinks that they are. So what happens if you think something they disapprove of? Well, so far we've been safe from that. But will we be safe from that for long? There are technologies right now that actually allow computers to insert advertisements into your dreams to interpret what you're dreaming, in fact. And there is theoretically some technologies that do allow the government to implant, I'm using the air quotes here, thoughts into your brain. It's sort of special radio waves, vibrations off the bones in your skull, that sort of thing, where it's not actually your thoughts. They just, you know, broadcast into your head pretty much. You know, I know that sounds like tinfoil hat stuff, but it actually is scientifically been proven to work. Whether or not the government has actually done that, who knows? But, and whether or not that will just kill the person outright, who knows? But the point is, it is all possible. And if the government continues to believe that your thoughts belong to them, well, how long before they start deploying technologies like this? Have they already researched such things? You know, we don't know. And that's another problem. The government thinks that your thoughts belong to them and their secrets belong to them. The government works for the interests of the people, not for the interests of itself. But that seems to have been lost over the years. The government now just works to give itself power, power over you, power over me, power over everybody, power over your very thoughts, which again, they consider cognitive infrastructure, and they think that they should be able to regulate as they please. Regulate your thoughts. Get into your head, tell you what to think, how to think, when to think it. Why is anybody in the government at this point? Why isn't there like a test that says if you believe this kind of stuff, you shouldn't be in government? How did we get to this point where it's almost a requirement to be a power mad psychopath Stalinist to join the United States government? The United States government, we used to oppose this kind of stuff. During the 50s, we had a huge rally in Congress from the McCarthy hearings just because people were scared of this sort of thing happening. Now, not only is it happening, it seems to have the blessings of half the country. Millions of people want this. It's insane. And there are no limits to where they're going to go. From here, unchecked. More Silker Joe Show after this break.
This May is ALS Awareness Month, a time to recognize ALS, or amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. As this incurable disease progresses, people with ALS lose the ability to speak, swallow, eat, move, and breathe. Diagnosed young, former nurse practitioner Kate Neese is on a mission to share her ALS story and spread awareness of this devastating disease.
On the day Stephen Hawking succumbed to ALS, I started my journey with this disease. Diagnosed at 32, I never imagined living with a disease that I thought only impacted older men. Now I am proud to serve as a mentor for other people living with ALS, especially young women. and I strive to continue advocating and spreading awareness among the ALS community and beyond. If you or a loved one is being treated with Radicava ORS, Edaravone, or Radicava IV, Edaravone, you could help others by sharing your story too.
To learn more about sharing your ALS story, visit shareyouralsstory.com. This message is sponsored by Mitsubishi Tanabe Pharma America. Indication: Radicava and Radicava ORS are indicated for the treatment of ALS. Important safety information: do not receive Radicava Edaravone or Radicava ORS Edaravone if you are allergic to Edaravone or any of the ingredients in Radicava and Radicava ORS. Before you take Radicava or Radicava ORS, tell your healthcare provider about all your medical conditions, including if you have asthma, are allergic to other medicines, are pregnant, or plan to become pregnant. It is not known if Radicava or Radicava ORS will harm your unborn baby. Are breastfeeding or plan to breastfeed. It is not known if Radicava or Radicava ORS passes into your breast milk. You and your healthcare provider should decide if you will receive Radicava or Radicava ORS or breastfeed. Tell your healthcare provider about all the medicines you take, including prescription and over-the-counter medicines, vitamins, and herbal supplements. What are the possible side effects of Radicava and Radicava ORS? Radicava and Radicava ORS may cause serious side effects, including hypersensitivity, allergic reactions, and sulfite allergic reactions. Hypersensitivity reactions have happened in people receiving Radicava or taking Radicava ORS and can happen after your medicine has been given. Radicava and Radicava ORS contain sodium bisulfite, a sulfite that may cause a type of allergic reaction that can be serious and life-threatening. Sodium bisulfite can also cause less severe asthma episodes in certain people. Sulfite sensitivity can happen more often in people who have asthma than in people who do not have asthma. Tell your healthcare provider right away or go to the nearest emergency room if you have any of the following symptoms: hives, swelling of the lips, tongue, or face, fainting, breathing problems, wheezing, trouble swallowing, dizziness, itching, or an asthma attack in people with asthma. Your healthcare provider will monitor you during treatment to watch for signs and symptoms of all the serious side effects and allergic reactions. The most common side effects include bruising, contusion, problems walking, gait disturbance, and headache. These are not all the possible side effects of Radicava or Radicava ORS. Call your doctor for medical advice about side effects. You may report side effects to FDA at 1-800-FDA-1088. You may also report side effects to www.fda.gov/medwatch or Mitsubishi Tanabe Pharma America Incorporated at 1-888-292-0058. For more information, including full prescribing information, please visit www.radicava.com.
This is David Cordani, CEO of Cigna. For more than 20 years, Cigna has worked with the March of Dimes to address premature births in the U.S. Premature births cause horrible suffering and cost billions of dollars each year. That's why Cigna is committed to raising funds and awareness through our employees, family, and friends to improve the health of moms and babies. Please join us in supporting the March for Babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
All right, welcome back to the Silker Show. Thank you for staying tuned in to us. We are joined now by Dr. Daniel Haller. He is a general surgeon practicing in Long Island, New York, and he filed a federal lawsuit challenging the No Surprises Act from 2020. Dr. Haller, thank you for being here. How are you today?
I'm well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, happy to have you. So walk us through this a little bit. What is it that the No Surprises Act did that you found needed to be challenged?
Okay, so let's just talk briefly about the No Surprises Act and actually why we want it.
So the No Surprises Act, in theory, the way it was initially conceived and had bipartisan support and had the support of medical professional associations, was a way for the doctors to be able to challenge the payments that they got from the insurance companies when they were non-par or not in-network. Historically, doctor would bill the insurance company would pay a minuscule amount, doctor would fight with the insurance company, and that can go on for a year, sometimes 2 years, and sometimes we have to get the patients involved to call, write letters, complain, and part of the leverage that the doctors had in order to get more from the insurance companies was, if you don't make this right, we will bill the patient for the balance of what we billed and what you paid. That'll make your customer unhappy, and then your customers may leave you. So this long fight, a year, year and a half, 2 years to get money, which included bothering the patients for it, none of us wanted that. So we were all in support of fundamentally the No Surprises Act, which allowed doctors to directly negotiate with the insurance companies. And if they weren't happy with the negotiation, the federal No Surprises Act was supposed to set up groups of arbitration that we can bring our claims to, and they would look at the usual and customary rate that we used to get paid and then decide on a payment that they felt was reasonable for the doctors to get paid. So again, we are in support of that. Take the patients out of the equation. Don't bother them. Don't make them annoyed or upset or even have to worry about finances at a time where they're potentially very vulnerable emotionally and physically, and compel the insurance companies to pay a fair and reasonable rate. After the statute became law, Biden's administration pushed that the arbitration groups, when deciding what a fair, reasonable rate was, they only had to look, and the most heavily weighted factor was the in-network rate, which means that the low rate that doctors sign up for in order to get volume, because they're listed in a company like United Healthcare's brochure of this doctor takes your insurance, out-of-network doctors never signed up for that. But Biden's administration pushed that the low in-network rate that they pay for in-network doctors, that's the only thing they have to pay when you have an out-of-network doctor providing an emergency care for a patient. So you can see how this changes things. All of a sudden, doctors used to be able to balance bill a patient, use that leverage to get better reimbursements, and the federal government comes along and says, okay, now the insurance company only has to pay the in-network rate, which is a very low reimbursement rate. So this is why we are fighting the No Surprises Act. We are fighting it not based on the fundamentals of it's not fair to us. We're okay with it, but what they did in terms of what the arbitration groups, how they determine what a fair rate is, that's what we're unhappy with. And to make matters even worse, the federal government, in its all infinite wisdom, it underestimated how many claims there would be, and the backlog is like 6 months. So you go ahead, you perform a procedure, you pay money to these arbitration groups to look at your case, and then 6 months later, they're finally deciding if you are good and what the insurance companies have to pay. According to the law, it's supposed to be within 30 days. So they're not even compliant with their own law, but yet they're creating a massive shift in wealth towards the insurance companies, massive shift in leverage and in power and control to the insurance companies away from private practitioners.
It sounds like the antithesis to what the No Surprises Act originally was supposed to be.
100%. In fact, there are a lot of congressmen who have their hands up in the air and they're at arms saying, this is not what we intended. We have letters from congressmen saying, this is not what we intended it to be. It was supposed to be fair and equitable, and the Biden administration pushed and made it completely inequitable and completely in the hands, and the power is all in the hands now of the insurance companies. I mean, think about – so last year, 2022, the bill went into effect January 1st of 2022, and United Healthcare, one of the largest providers of health insurance in the nation – in Q1 of 2022, exactly when they stopped paying the doctors, boasted a record-breaking profit of over $5 billion. Of course they have a record-breaking profit. They stopped paying the doctors.
That is incredible. And this seems like it's actually going to feed the problem, because with those record-breaking profits, that means they have more money for lobbyists to fight people like you trying to stop this sort of stuff from happening.
100%. And unfortunately, who is going to suffer here? Okay, so a doctor takes a 20%, 30% hit, even a 50% reduction in revenue. A lot of practices are folding, and the doctors are either leaving the state, or they're becoming to work in massive medical institutions, or they just stay in business making less money. But no one's crying over doctors making less money. Everyone seems to think that they make too much money anyway. But unfortunately, what's happening is that it's going back onto the patient, in which some areas, if you need to see a specialist, you can't find one because that doctor either left or that doctor won't do any emergency care, and they'll only take cash if you come to their office. So you have hospitals now that cannot get a plastic surgeon or a hand surgeon to cover emergency needs.
So depletion of medical resources for communities is also what this leads to, but it also it seems to be inflating the importance of a hospital. And hospitals aren't really like where you want to go for general care, because they have so many people coming in and out. It's not like they have like one doctor dedicated to a small amount of people who can keep track of those people.
That's right. And unfortunately, what's also happening is they're driving a lot of specialists out. There are two hospitals near me in Long Island that were given 60 days notice right before the end of 2022, and their anesthesia group pulled out. How do you run a hospital without anesthesia? How do you perform operations without anesthesia? The hospital groups decided that New York was too difficult of a market, and they left. There's another anesthesia group that's on the verge of bankruptcy.
Wow.
It doesn't make sense. The reimbursements are so low. And I know there's all this talk and people say it's not true, but the commercial for-profit payers, they subsidize, whether they know it or not, the payments that the Medicare, Medicaid, Obama plans pay, because they don't pay a lot. So a lot of these groups, especially anesthesia, they rely on the fact that they'll get a higher payment from a commercial payer, which is for-profit, and at the end of the day, it kind of subsidizes the tiny payments. Anesthesiologists, when they bill Medicaid, straight Medicaid, they get a dollar per minute. A dollar per minute. So if there's an hour operation, they make $60. How is that viable? It's not. They used to rely on the fact that the for-profit, the Aetnas, the Cignas, the United Healthcares, were paying much larger payments than that, and they would do these other procedures with anesthesia basically for free, but it would supplement. Now that the money is no longer coming in from the commercial carriers, they can't survive on the Obama plans and Medicaid. So two hospitals lost their anesthesia group. Multiple ambulatory surgery centers have lost their anesthesia groups. It's not a viable model. So if what the government wants is to push all private practitioners out of business and move to big corporate conglomerate medicine and move to a single-payer system, that's where they're pushing. That's where they're going. But at the end of the day, the way I see it, you're still going to have people that know that they're better in terms of providing care, and you're going to have two tiers. You're going to have those who have money, who are willing to pay cash for better care, and those who don't have money that will end up in the government system.
And for all the talk of equity and fairness coming out of the Biden administration, this seems to be entirely counter to it. For all the talk of holding big corporations accountable and disrupting their power, this seems to be doing the exact opposite.
Exactly. In 2019, the Business Roundtable, it's a group of over 200 businessmen that are CEOs and presidents of large corporations. They came out with a huge ground-shaking and groundbreaking statement, because it used to be, from the 1960s and on, the primary reason to be in business was profit. That's what they said all along. Every time you ask big business CEO, what's the reason to be in business? To make profit. In 2019, these 200 CEOs came out and they said the primary reason for business is for all of their stakeholders, not just shareholders, all their stakeholders. Part of the stakeholders are the consumers. The consumers in medicine are the patients.
Well, we'll have to leave it there, Dr. Haller, but appreciate you being on the Silker Joe Show today. Listeners, more after the break.
Rockstar Energy is jumpstarting the summer you want with the energy you need, giving away $50,000 to fuel your Memorial Day weekend. Millions of Americans are eager to kick off the holiday weekend with a travel getaway. In fact, experts predict 82% of summer travel will be by car. And with high gas prices, 89% will be looking for travel rewards, which is why Rockstar Energy wants to help you save at the pump and stay energized to get to your next destination. Here's how it works. Throughout Memorial Day weekend, the first 1,000 people to stop by any gas station, buy three Rockstar Energy products, and fuel up on gas or electric charge will get up to $50 cash back. Text ENERGY to 81234 to find out more. The rewards don't stop there. All summer long, you can earn up to $5 cash back when you buy two Rockstar Energy products and fill up at any gas station. To find out more, text ROCKSTAR to 81234. Let Rockstar fuel your drive this summer. I'm Kendra Wright.
IBM Cloud Carbon Calculator is an AI-informed dashboard that gives organizations access to standards-based cloud emissions data with just a few clicks, helping them build a more sustainable future. As businesses move further on their hybrid multi-cloud journeys, they're working to deliver innovation while meeting growing ESG demands. Brianna Frank, Vice President, IBM Cloud.
Emissions reporting is becoming commonplace worldwide, yet inadequate data is the biggest obstacle to making ESG progress. With the IBM Cloud Carbon Calculator, we are making it easier for our clients to assess the data they need to address their carbon impact and to make more informed decisions.
The IBM Cloud Carbon Calculator enables organizations to track their emissions across various workloads down to the cloud service level and help further advance their sustainability objectives. The new dashboard complements IBM's existing sustainability solutions and expertise. By infusing data with AI into daily operations, IBM helps companies make sustainability strategies actionable. To learn more, visit ibm.com/think. Sponsored by IBM.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much, from the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between. It really is so special, and boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
My baby brother, a father.
Come on, it's time for his nap.
Whoa, he can't sleep on his stomach. Babies should always sleep on their backs in a safety-approved crib, and the sleep area should be clear of blankets, toys, and other loose or soft items. It reduces the risk of SIDS.
SIDS?
You know, sudden infant death syndrome.
Guess I need to start studying up on safe sleep for little man here. Being his favorite uncle comes with big responsibilities.
For more information, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. You want to give your baby everything, so start with a safe sleep area. Babies younger than one should always be placed to sleep on their backs on a firm and flat surface like a safety-approved crib. And keep blankets, pillows, and other soft or loose items out of the crib when the baby is in it. Learn more about safe sleep for babies at safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. but get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
All right, wrapping up the Silker Joe Show today, this hour with Dr. Daniel Howler, still joining us from the last segment. He is a general surgeon practicing in Long Island and filed a lawsuit against the No Surprises Act. So Dr. Howler, at the tail end of the last segment, commercial break interrupted it, speaking of commercialism and profit, but you were talking about how in the 60s corporations, you know, they said that we were for profit, and then in 2019, they all got together and said, well, now it's stakeholder capitalism. Could you tell us, pick up, I guess, where you left off before the break?
Yeah, sure. So in 2019, all of a sudden, this groundbreaking announcement came out that these 200 CEOs get together and they said, you know, we have to be responsible to all the stakeholders. And that includes the customers, but it also includes the world. So that's why all of a sudden, in the last couple of years, you see all of these businesses trying to be involved in social rights movements or in climate change or all these other social aspects of society. But one of the big factors is the consumer. The consumer is a stakeholder. So when you're selling a product and your only interest is in profit and you don't care about the consumer, then you really don't care about the quality of your product, as long as you can continue to sell and sell and sell and then advertise and sell more. But if you bring the consumer into it and you look at not just the shareholders, which are the people who invested in your company as the primary responsibility, but to all the stakeholders that are potentially in your purview, the consumer is important, which means that in the healthcare industry, the health insurance companies must take into effect the consumer, which is the patient. But they don't do that. All they constantly do is deny procedures, deny claims, deny medications for people. Why is it that I pay a lot of money for health insurance, and if I want to use my health insurance to cover my medications, my bill is higher than for me going and paying $9.99 for a GoodRx subscription, and using GoodRx, my prescription is cost me less money than if I use my actual health insurance? It's because they find every way to make the consumer, the patient, their customer, pay more out of their pocket so they could pay less and therefore make more profit. Okay, imagine an appendectomy. You would think that an appendectomy is an emergency, right? You come in with appendicitis, it's an emergency. Well, about 10, 12 years ago, the insurance companies decided it is not an emergency. You do not get admitted to the hospital. Instead, you're under observation or ambulatory status. You know what that means? When you sign on for your health insurance, there's two columns, one for an emergency admission to a hospital and one for ambulatory surgery. Your payment, your deductible, your coinsurance is higher for ambulatory surgery than it is for a full admission to the hospital. So guess what? The insurance companies found a way to make a patient pay more money out of pocket than if they were admitted to the hospital. They call it ambulatory surgery. It's unbelievable. They continue to defy all logic in order to make more and more profit, and they don't care what happens to their consumers.
Yeah, I was reading, forgot what the exact numbers were, but it was essentially out of all the people who go bankrupt because of medical procedures, 3/4 of them actually do have insurance of some kind.
The insurance companies are not paying enough to the people providing the care. And I would probably say most private doctors do not go after patients for balances in care that the insurance companies have. But if you're part of a mega institution, you have no choice. You have no say. So let's say a place like Northwell, huge Northeast medical conglomerate, multiple mega institution, okay? They are very pushy when it comes to bills. You can read some of the articles that came out around the time of COVID. They were going after patients because of the balance of the bills for COVID, their coinsurance, their deductibles. This is a time where the nation was completely destroyed, where people weren't working. There was no money coming in. There was no money going out. And Northwell went after them. It's because these big mega health corporations, they don't care about the patients either. They care about one thing, keeping the wheels turning. And the insurance companies don't pay, and eventually the large medical institutions go after the patients for the balances. And it's unfair. It really is. People pay. Can you imagine you pay for your automobile insurance? You get into a car accident, you pay your $500 deductible, and then your automobile insurance company says, you know, we really don't want to pay the whole amount on this one. It's a lot of money. We're only going to pay 50%. You could pay the rest. That's not the deal. That's not the contract that you sign up for. You sign up for insurance to insure you in a time of need. Well, the medical insurance industry is so different. They decide what they want to pay, how much they want to pay, when they want to pay, and if they want to pay. But people who sign up and pay these premiums, they're not expecting that. They're expecting their medical expenses to be covered. And what's happening is the insurance companies are making more and more money. Their profits are growing in the billions exponentially, but our premiums are going up and our deductibles are going up and our coinsurance percentages going up. The amount we have to continue to pay out of pocket is getting higher and higher, and they're making more and more profit. It doesn't make sense. If you look at what the doctors were making 30 years ago from any given procedure or office visit, and you compare that, and we're talking about Medicare rates, and you compare that to what they're making today, they're making 22% less, not including inflation. 22% less. What profession makes less money today than they did 30 years ago? It's because the government doesn't think that healthcare is important enough to pay for it. That's why every year they talk about Medicare cuts. We got to cut Medicare, the budget. In this debt ceiling, they want to raise the debt ceiling. Why? Well, we got to make cuts. Where are we going to cut from? Social Security and Medicare. Why? Why those two? Why don't they cut from some of their crazy military spending or other things that they're just throwing money out the door? It's cutting money from places that need it. How do you cut from Social Security? What are those people going to do? You know what happens when you cut from Medicare? Doctors make less money. People have to pay more money out of pocket. So they're just putting the social responsibility back on people to pay for their medical care instead of the government saying, yes, we created Medicare, we're going to pay for it. The problem is they didn't have the foresight. There are less people contributing to Medicare today. There are more people needing Medicare payments. People are living longer. When Medicare was created, they thought, okay, we're going to start Medicare at X years, and people are going to live until the age of late 60s, early 70s. So they'll only have to pay 5 to 7 years until they eventually don't pass. Today, people are living 15, 20 years on Medicare payments.
It's definitely poor planning, and no one seems to want to do anything about it because it's just huge profits in the way the system is. Dr. Daniel Haller, good luck with your lawsuit against the No Surprises Act. Listeners, thank you for tuning in to the Silk or Joe Show today, and thank you, Dr. Haller, for being on the program today as well. If you want to find out more about us, you can go to MainStreetRadioNetwork.com or on Twitter, or Getter, GETTR.com at Silk or Joe Show. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.